Why is the teaching of reading such a problem today? You would think that that's the last thing that should be a problem. I mean, children have been taught to read since biblical times. That's over 4,000 years. So why do we have so many problems here in the United States? Why is it so difficult to teach children to read? Well, of course, it's because of the way the teaching of reading was changed in the United States back in the 1930s. The professors of education threw out the alphabetic phonics method, which is the proper way to teach children to read an alphabetic writing system, and they decided to teach children to read English as if it were Chinese, that is, by using a whole word or sight or look say method, the Dick and Jane method, which many of you were taught in your schools. Many of you were probably taught to read by the Dick and Jane method. Well, of course, that method was created by the progressive educators, the humanists, the atheists, whose purpose it was basically to dumb down the American people so that we could be sort of led into a socialist system. Now, we've known about this problem at least since 1955, when Dr. Rudolph Flesch wrote his book, Why Johnny Can't Read. I'm sure that most of you are familiar with that book. That was written in 1955. And what did Dr. Flesch tell us back in 1955? He said the reason why the kids can't read is because they're not being taught to read in the proper manner. And in fact, he said, the teaching of reading all over the United States in all the schools and all the textbooks is totally wrong and flies in the face of all logic and common sense. And then, of course, he explained what I just told you about how the professors had changed the way reading is taught in American schools. So that's why we have this reading problem in America. And it goes on today because the educators are determined to lead this nation into one world socialism. And so they want to dumb us down sufficiently so that Americans can't even read the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution or even the Bible, you see. The easiest way to control people, to bring them under your control, is to make sure that they don't have access to great ideas, to literature, and so they depend entirely on the socialist elite at the top to tell them how to lead their lives and what to do. Now, as I said, they change the way reading is taught. You know, the alphabet is very important. The alphabet was invented about 2,000 years B.C., Now, what form of writing preceded before the alphabet was invented? Well, the earliest form of writing is known as pictography. The cavemen drew pictures on the walls of their caves, and you didn't have to go to school to learn how to read those pictures because the symbols looked like the things they represented. I mean, a tree looked like a tree, a man looked like a man, etc. But as civilization became more complex, the scribes had to depict what was not easy to depict. For example, ideas. How do you draw pictures of ideas? You can't. So what do? You draw little pictures, and then you tell people that, well, this particular symbol stands for this particular idea. I mean, how do you draw a picture of such ideas as good and evil, or right or wrong, or easy? Or such concepts as facilitate, or system, or method, or determine. How do you draw a picture of determine? You can't. So you draw a little picture, and you tell everybody, this stands for determine. It doesn't look like determine, but it's determine. Now, modern Chinese is an ideographic writing system. They have 50,000 of those little squigglies, none of which look like anything they represent. Very difficult to learn. And of course, it's a tremendous hindrance to the development of language. Now, along comes the, about 2,000 years B.C., somebody has a remarkable idea. Somebody makes a remarkable discovery. Somebody discovered that all of human language, everything we say, is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds. And so that person said to himself, instead of using this complex system of ideographs, of little pictures, none of which look like anything they represent, and that take years to master, why don't I create a small set of symbols to stand for the irreducible speech sounds of the language, and then we will have a very simple means of transcribing the spoken word directly into written form, and an equally simple means of translating the written language back into spoken form. And so the first alphabet was invented. Now, as I said, all of human language is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds. How many speech sounds do you think there are in the English language? Irreducible speech sounds. Does anybody want to volunteer? Does anybody? Right, 44. Did you read it in my book? Or? But there are only 44 sounds in the English language. Now, why do we have a 26-letter alphabet? Well, you see, what happened is this. When the Romans conquered the British islands, or the English islands, they imposed the Latin alphabet on the people who lived there. And if you're going to adapt somebody else's alphabet for your language, and you've got 44 sounds and you've got 26 letters, you're going to have to make some accommodation. So some of our sounds are represented by more than one letter, and some of our letters stand for more than one sound. For example, the typically English sounds is represented by TH, the SH, the CH, by CH. The letter A stands for at least four different sounds. It stands for the long A, as in apron or April. It stands for the short A, the A, as in cat or bat. It stands for the ah sound, as in father or car. And it stands for the aw sound, as in all and ball. Well, then how does a child learn which sound is called for when he sees the letter A? Well, if you teach a child to read by an intensive, systematic phonics system, you teach the letter sounds in their spelling families. And that's how we teach children to read. And teaching alphabetic writing is very simple. It's a three-step process. First, you teach the child to recognize the letters of the alphabet, you know, their names. The alphabet song is one technique. There are other techniques. The second step is to teach the child the sounds that the letters stand for. And how do you do that? Well, for generations, for hundreds of years, it was done in the most mechanical, simple way. They would teach the child, for example, that the letter B stood for the consonant sound B, the letter M stood for the consonant sound M, and then they would join the consonant letters with the vowels, and they would drill the child in the consonant-vowel combinations, such as baby, bi, bo, bu, may, me, my, mo, mu, ba, 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 ma, 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 ma. Now, the purpose of that drill was to make sure that the child developed an automatic association between letter and sound, so that when the child sees the letters in their various combinations, he hears the sounds. Just as a musician, when he sees the notes on a page of music, hears the music. Once that is done, once that automatic association is accomplished or achieved, then the child is given words and sentences and little stories to read, you see. And that's how you teach a child to read, by an alphabetic writing system. Now, the way they teach reading in American schools today is that they leave out step two. They teach step one to recognize the letters of the alphabet, but then they don't drill the child in the letter sounds. They go directly to whole words, and they teach a sight vocabulary. A sight vocabulary, by definition, is teaching children to look at English words without their knowing that the letters stand for something, without their knowing that those letters have meaning. As far as the child is concerned, those letters are a bunch of arbitrary squiggles with no meaning whatever. And how do they teach a sight vocabulary? Well, first the teacher will draw a little picture around the word. Take, for example, the word horse. She'll draw a little frame around the word horse and say, see the little horse? Child has to associate the whole word with a picture of a horse. Now, you and I know that H-O-R-S-E doesn't look like a horse. So how does a child see a horse in that frame? You know how? Any way he can. Maybe the H will remind him of a horse, or the O, or the R, or the S, or the E. They don't know. The professors don't know. Then, of course, that's not enough. So they also provide the child with lots of picture clues. When they introduce the word horse, they have so many pictures of horses on the page that the child concludes it must be horse. But, of course, you can't always have pictures of horses every time you use the word. You've got other things to illustrate, so they also provide context clues. They'll use the word horse in such a context as the man put the saddle on the, and the child will think, well, it could be a donkey, it could be a camel, but it's probably a horse. And then to reduce the ridiculousness of the guessing, they teach the child phonetic clues. Now, phonetic clues is not phonics. If you go to your public school and ask the teacher, do you teach phonics? She may be using the worst of the look-safe programs, and she'll say, yes, we teach phonics. But she is not teaching intensive systematic phonics. She is not teaching drilling the letter sounds before the child reads whole words. She's teaching phonetic clues. In other words, she's teaching beginning consonant sounds so that if the child sees that the word begins with an H, it couldn't possibly be, buffalo or balloon or baloney, but it could be house, hotel, hovel, hearse, or horse. So they reduce the scope of the guessing to... But at the same time, they also teach something very contradictory. For example, the leading professor of reading in the United States, Dr. Kenneth Goodman, calls reading a psycholinguistic guessing game. And he told a reporter from the New York Times that if the child sees the word horse and says pony, that's correct. Because the child is seeing a picture, seeing the, something that's sort of, galloping. Now, of course, that violates this whole business of phonetic clues. How can a child see the word horse and say pony, and that's correct? After all, pony begins with a P, not with an H. So they contradict one another, and that's why the kids can't learn to read in America. That's why we have this reading problem. And so if we want to get back to teaching children to read in the proper manner, we've got to get back to intensive, systematic phonics. It's as simple as that. Incidentally, as soon as the alphabet was invented, something else of tremendous importance occurred. The scripture began to appear, the Holy Scripture. Now, why? Why did that occur just about when the alphabet was invented? Well, you see, man had to wait until he had an accurate, precise means of transcribing the spoken word directly into written form before the word of God could be put on paper. Because after all, how does God communicate with the human race? He doesn't send us little pictures. He doesn't send us ideographs. He doesn't send us comic books. He speaks to us through his prophets. And so we had to have a means of transcribing the spoken word directly into written form, an accurate, precise means of doing so before the word of God could be put on paper. So the invention of the alphabet is extremely important to man's spiritual life. Very important. Without it, we wouldn't have had the scriptures, you see. Now, isn't it interesting that our progressive educators decided to do away with all of the advantages of alphabetic writing because it certainly is easier to memorize the sounds of 26 letters than it is to learn thousands and thousands of sight words. It's interesting that our atheist, humanist, progressive educators should revert back to a pagan form of writing to teach our children to read. Because one of their goals was to make sure that our people were not literate enough to read the Bible. They wanted to make sure that, yes, there was literacy in the United States, but it was at such a low level that it would be impossible for our people to achieve high literacy, you see. So that's why they changed the way reading is taught, and that's why they still teach that way in American schools. Sure, here and there you will find a public school teacher who does teach intensive phonics. Maybe that particular teacher happened to attend a conference like this, or one of the Reading Reform Foundation conferences, or took a course on her own in intensive phonics, but the vast majority of teachers of reading teach the look-say method. In fact, there's a new form of the look-say method that is now becoming the method of teaching children to read in America. It's called whole language. Whole language is now sweeping the country from coast to coast. It is the new fad that is being used by the educators to teach reading. And to give you an idea of what whole language is all about, I happen to come across an article in the Washington Post describing this new method. Reading, and it says here, reading method lets pupils guess. Whole language approach riles advocates of phonics. And it says here, the most controversial aspect of whole language is the de-emphasis on accuracy. American Reading Council President Julia Palmer, an advocate of the approach, said it is acceptable if a young child reads the word house for home or substitutes the word pony for horse. It's not very serious because she understands the meaning, said Palmer. Accuracy is not the name of the game. This is coming from our top educators. Accuracy is not the name of the game. Who among you believes that accuracy is not the name of the game when it comes to reading? You'd better be accurate when you're reading, especially a contract or a lease or an insurance policy. You know how one letter in an entire sentence can change the meaning of that sentence. So accuracy is absolutely important. And in our technological world, accuracy is absolutely important. Accuracy is important to the Japanese and the Germans. It's very important. Incidentally, this method of teaching has caused dyslexia. It causes the symptoms of dyslexia. I don't have the time to go into them, but I can tell you that this method of teaching causes the symptoms of dyslexia. And incidentally, guess how they teach reading in the Soviet Union? Do you think they use this guessing technique? No, they use intensive phonics. They used the guess technique until 1932, when they decided that that was destroying literacy in Russia, and they wanted to create engineers who had a sense of accuracy. They wanted scientists and engineers, and so they switched back to intensive phonics, and they've been using that method ever since. Now, isn't it interesting that our humanist educators, who admire so many things that come out of the Soviet Union, who admire so much of what the communists have done, the one thing they don't follow, the one thing they don't copy is the way the Russians teach children to read in the Soviet Union. Fascinating, interesting. So there is a conspiracy against literacy in this country. Make no mistake about it, it is a conspiracy, because they never asked the parents, how do you want your children to be taught to read? Parents were never consulted. Parents were never told that we are going to teach your child to read English as if it were Chinese, and they haven't told their parents that accuracy is not the name of the game. They don't tell that to parents, you see. They didn't get the parents' permission. They didn't take a vote. They did it on their own, and they continue to do it today. And that's why it's so important. That's one of the important things that is happening in the homeschool movement, is that they're finding out how reading is actually to be taught. Now, I've written a number of books on this whole problem. And it's imperative for you to know this whole, to become experts in this. And I wrote a book back in 1972, The New Illiterates, in which I analyzed the Dick and Jane reading program line for line and came to the conclusion that method of teaching would cause the symptoms of dyslexia. If you want to become an expert on the reading problem, I would strongly suggest that you read this book. It'll make you will know more about reading and how to teach reading than 99.9% of the teachers in the schools. It's important for you parents to be fortified, because the incompetence of the schools is unbelievable. The incompetence of the educators is unbelievable. You see, when they drag you into court, the educators drag you into court in the name of education, and they tell you that the state has a compelling interest in education, you'd better ask them, what do you mean by education? And you'd better ask them, how do you teach children to read? I was able to help win a case in Fort Worth by simply pointing out that they didn't know how to teach children to read in American schools. The judge wanted to know all about this. This was all new to the judge. He didn't know that there was such a problem. And so this gives you tremendous ammunition in your hands when you have this knowledge. Knowledge is power. This knowledge will give you power over the Texas Education Agency. It's important to have that. Now, in my book on the NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education, I go into the conspiracy on the part of the progressive educators to destroy literacy in this country. I cite chapter and verse. I give full documentation on all of this. It's there. And if you're going to tell people, or your friends and neighbors, that the educators are deliberately dumbing down this country, you'd better be prepared. You better have the documentation, because they'll think you're insane. They'll think you ought to be in an asylum somewhere under lock and key. So it's good to have the information, because you can prove it very easily. You can prove it very easily. Now, I've also, because I've been such a critic of how the schools do things, I felt it imperative that I provide parents with the tools with which they can teach their own children the basic three R's in the schools. The great damage is done in those first three grades. And now also in kindergarten, because now they're using kindergarten as a place. Life. Failing kindergarten. Now, when I was in kindergarten, you know, what did we do? We just played with blocks. We had a wonderful time. You couldn't fail kindergarten. You couldn't possibly fail kindergarten. But today, you can actually fail kindergarten. And now everything is on a computer. Your child's record. Every child's record is on a computer. This is permanent. You know, the records that were kept for me in the first grade, they were long destroyed. I'm sure that the public schools of New York City didn't keep these records. But once these records are on computer, they are going to track every child from birth right through to the very end now. It's all on the computer. If your child is learning disabled in the first grade, that's it. He's labeled for life. And incidentally, that method of teaching creates learning disabilities. It creates dyslexia. We know that. So I wrote two books to enable parents to teach children reading, writing, and arithmetic. And it's in the How to Tutor book, Intensive Phonics, Reading, Cursive Writing. It's another horrible thing that the educators have done. They've destroyed penmanship in America. They've destroyed simple writing. They don't teach children writing the way it was taught. Today, what they do, they first teach the child In the first grade, they teach ball and stick, you know. They call it manuscript. Then in the second grade, they teach slant print. You know, they're getting them ready for cursive. Then in the third grade, they thrust them into cursive. Well, by the third grade, they're so busy doing other things that the child doesn't have the chance to develop a good cursive script. The teacher doesn't have time to supervise the development of a good cursive script. They have to do so many other things. And a lot of kids who have developed their printing to a high art tell themselves, I'm not going to learn cursive. I'm going to go on printing for the rest of my life. And we all know people who do that, who print. They're good at printing. They never bothered to learn cursive. They didn't want to learn cursive. They refuse to learn cursive. And they don't even teach the kids how to hold a pen correctly, you know. Have you seen many young adults? You've ever looked at, go to the banks, the bank tellers, holding pens like this, like that. You've got the muscular dystrophy hold, the five-finger stab. You know, they held it any way possible. It took 2,000 years of human experience to devise the simplest and easiest way to hold a pen. Very simple, easy. You could write for hours without tiring. Very simple way. It's the simplest way to, but we're not going to tell children that. You see, the educators do not want to cramp the children's creativity. So they're telling the kids, you can write any way you want. Ugh, you know, any way you want. And you so you have individual use five fingers instead of only three, four fingers, you know. And you wonder why people have such poor handwritings today. I believe that you should teach cursive in the first grade as I was taught. You know, it's very simple. You know, actually, it's easier to teach cursive in the first grade than ball and stick because there are only three movements in all of cursive. There's the under curve, the over curve, and the up and down. That's all there is to cursive. It's very simple. But if you ask today's teachers, why don't you teach cursive in the first grade? They say, oh, well, you can't do that. Their little fingers aren't developed enough. Their motor skills aren't developed. They're little cripples, you see. They can't write yet. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Children can learn cursive. It takes a little time, but what else are you going to do in the first grade? You've got all the time in the world in the first grade to learn to read and to write, you see. And then, of course, they no longer teach arithmetic. They went in for the new math, you remember that? With the sets, set theory, empty sets. We called it zero. They called it an empty set. Remember that? Oh, now they have bigger plans. New math was a big failure. Now they have a new math that they're working on. They won't go back to arithmetic. They've even erased the word from the vocabulary. They don't use the word arithmetic anymore. They use the word math because they want to mix up everything. You see, arithmetic is really quite separate from algebra and mathematics. Arithmetic is a counting system, and we use 10 symbols, and it's a memory system. To become adept at arithmetic, you must memorize the arithmetic facts. It's as simple as that. And that can only be done by rote drill. But rote is a dirty word in American education today. Barbara Walters did a big special on television about why American kids are so far behind and can't match the Japanese. She mentioned in passing that the Japanese use rote learning, but she said, well, we can't do that in America, you see. Rote is no good for Americans. Okay for the Japanese, but not for us. So that's why the Japanese do better than we do, because we have this prejudice now against rote learning, as if there was some horrible, terrible punishment imposed on children. Actually, it's the simplest and easiest way to learn anything. It's the simplest, easiest way to learn a memory system. Arithmetic is a memory system. If you don't memorize it, if you don't drill in it, if it doesn't become automatic in your mind, you really can't use the system very well. So all of those three subjects are covered in this book. Then I began doing a lot of tutoring, and I realized that I needed a book with larger type to teach reading. And so I decided to produce Alpha Phonics. And this is the result of years of experience. It's not something that I wrote before I did the teaching. All of this was once in just blank notebooks. I put them in, I had to do it by hand in notebooks, and finally I published it. And all it does is teach our alphabetic system in a very systematic, intensive way. As you will see, there are no pictures. Children do not need pictures to learn to read. Isn't that surprising? Every book that's on the market today is crammed with pictures and two words at the bottom of the page. Have you noticed? You go to the supermarket, all they do is have Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck all over the place. And the kids look at the pictures and then they look at the word, picture, word, picture, word. They want to see, you know, match the two. You don't need pictures when you're teaching letter sounds. You don't need pictures at all. You know, children are very serious learners. Do you realize that every child teaches himself to speak his own language all by himself? Virtually beginning at birth. By the time they're ready to go to school, they've developed a speaking vocabulary into thousands and thousands of words, and they've done it all by themselves without the help of Sesame Street, without the help of clowns jumping out of garbage cans. They've done it all by themselves. Isn't it interesting? And how do children do it? Trial and error. They listen, they repeat, and they learn so well. You know that. You're witnesses to this tremendous phenomenon that goes out, how human children learn to speak their own language so early in life, and they master it so well, and they use such complex syntax and diction, and their vocabularies grow so fast. And they don't need pictures, and they don't need games to do it, do they? And you don't have to trick them into learning to speak, do you? But all of American education now is based on the notion that children really don't want to learn to read, and you've got to trick them into reading by prettying it up, by babyfying it, by giving, you know, surrounding it with fun and games. I have found that whenever I teach a child to read with alphaphonics, and many parents tell me this, the children don't ask for pictures. They want to learn to read as quickly as possible so that they can begin reading books. All this does is teach the mechanics. They want to get through the mechanics quickly without all the extra paraphernalia. Now, sure, they can be very entertaining, those things. I have nothing against methods that use entertainment and games, but they're not necessary, and they take up a lot of time. Children want to get through it as quickly as possible because you don't want to insult their intelligence. They are very intelligent. That age, they have this tremendous language learning energy. Tremendous language learning energy. How come human children have it? Why is it that only human children learn to speak, but no other species can do that? Well, it's because, you see, God made us in his image, and he wanted to be able to communicate with us. And so he gave us the power of the word, because actually, what does it say in the Bible? The Bible says, in the beginning was the word was with God, and the word was God. So there's this strong association between God and the word, and that's why he gave us the power of the word, and that's why every child has that tremendous power to learn the word so early in life. He gave that gift to the human race. He didn't give it to any other species. Now, the behavioral psychologists and scientists don't particularly like that idea that human beings have this special ability to speak. They say, oh, come on, what's all this fuss being made over human language? After all, what is it? It's only a slightly more evolved form of animal talk. That's all it is. It's just a little more complicated. Meow or bow wow or chirp. That's all it is. As a matter of fact, the behaviorists call a human speech, they call it a verbal behavior. You know, like a gurgle. Verbal behavior. That's what it is. As a matter of fact, they've experimented there. They were convinced that the only reason why monkeys couldn't speak is because they've been socially deprived. So they've experimented. They've had monkeys, little monkeys, living among human families to see if they would learn to speak. But I'm afraid the monkeys didn't do much better than the dogs or the cats that we live with. Monkeys just don't have that power of language. Oh, they've tried every which way to try to get monkeys to learn to speak, and they just can't do it. They don't have the power. God did not give it to them, you see. And yet, what the schools are trying to do is bring us all down to the animal level. That's what evolution is all about. That's what humanism is all about. And that's what they do to the children in the schools. They say, you are little animals. And you can be taught like a little animal by use of conditioning techniques, Pavlovian conditioning. Pavlov developed the most sophisticated methods of conditioning dogs, you know. The salivating dog. And of course, they've applied the behavior supply those methods to the children in the schools. The look-say method is based on behavioral conditioning. That's why the words are repeated. You know, the constant repetition of the same word over and over and over again. Because they want the child to, to be conditioned. You know, like, this is a typical passage from Dick and Jane, and I'm sure that many of you remember this. You've heard it before. Oh, Jane. Look, Jane, look. Look, look. Oh, look. See, Jane. See, see. See, Jane. Oh, see, Jane. And the repetitions. The word look in the Dick and Jane pre-primers is repeated 110 times. In phonics, you would teach look, book, took. You would teach a whole family of words. Here they just teach one word and repeat it 110 times. The word O-H is repeated 138 times just to learn O. The word C is repeated 176 times. That's conditioning, you see. And that's the way they're teaching children to read in American schools today. So, now many of you were taught to read by the Dick and Jane method and perhaps do not understand what it is to isolate sounds. I remember when I was tutoring a businessman in Boston, a very successful restaurateur, a millionaire, graduate of Indiana University, gymnastics instructor at MIT. He told me he couldn't read. He said he couldn't read. What he meant was that he was a look-say reader and he had to guess every fifth word or every sixth word. And I said, well, would you like to learn? And I said, I specialize in tutoring people like you and learning to read. He said, sure, I'd love to. So I'd go up to his office after hours, and I started teaching him using Alpha Phonics. In those days, it was in a notebook. And I started teaching him the very first lesson to isolate the sound, ah. He had never said ah in his life. He didn't know what ah was, or eh, or ih, or ah. He didn't know, you see. He hadn't been taught that. And he says, do people actually can say that? I said, sure they can. He said, is this phonics? I said, yes, it's phonics. He said, you know, when I was in the first grade, our class was divided up into two groups. One group went into phonics, and the other group went into something else. He said, I went into the something else. So here was the first grade in which they turned this highly intelligent man into a functional illiterate. He told me that he found reading so painful that he would rather be beaten than have to read. Now that shocked me, coming from an adult. He would rather be beaten than have to read. It just shows you the damage that method does to teaching reading. Some people say, well, what's the difference? So look, say it, maybe it's a little slower. No, it's not just a little slower. It actually damages the brain. It actually retards the individual. It cripples the child permanently. Because how many of them can we reach? Why do you think the inner cities are full of these youngsters who can't read? 40% of black youths can't read. 40%. They've all gone to school. Everybody has to go to school in America. You know, we've got compulsory school attendance. You've heard of that? Compulsory school attendance. How come you can spend 10 years in school, 12 years in school, and come out not knowing how to read? How come? How come that back in the old days, in the 1890s, you went to school for 5 years and you came out reading beautifully? It's so interesting when you hear of your grandfather who only went to grade school, never went to high school, and yet has books on philosophy on his shelf. Because in those days, once you learned the mechanics of reading, you could read anything. So we have quite a job on our hands. And one of the marvelous things about the homeschool movement is at least the homeschoolers are getting back to intensive phonics. And they are learning to read. And they are learning to recapture what it means to be literate. That is to once more achieve a sense of high literacy. And if you go back into the early days of our country and you realize how literate those men were, the men who wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Federalist Papers, do you know that the Federalist Papers were read by farmers? How many professors today could read the Federalist Papers? Not too many. Incidentally, many of the teachers teaching children to read were themselves taught by the Lucsaim method and are themselves semi-literate. I hate to say that, but it's true. There was a woman on a Christian radio station the other day talking about a teacher talking about the wonders of whole language. Well, it turned out when I listened closely that she was talking about how she was taught to read. She had been taught by a Lucsaim method, so her reading, she wasn't a very good reader herself. So you have poor readers teaching children to read in the schools who never were taught phonics, having the faintest idea what intensive phonics is all about. And that's why this country is sort of, you know, just declining in its literacy skills. Declining so badly that the Secretary of Education can say that this nation, that we may perish as the nation we know unless we do better. And I can assure you that the educators have no intention of doing better because I've just told you what they are teaching in the schools today, what the new fad is, whole language. They're going to make things much worse. So you have the opportunity to spread the gospel of phonics, not only among your families, but also among your friends, and let your neighbors know, hey, do you know how they're teaching reading at the local school? You'd better find out how they're doing it. I suppose in Texas it's a very mixed bag, but I know that when the Texas book selection committee chose their reading textbooks, they chose Lucse basal reading programs. It's interesting that with all the money that's being spent on school reform, education reform in Texas, that's the one thing they have not reformed. Isn't it interesting that your legislature has not mandated the teaching of intensive phonics in the first grade? Oh, they'll mandate sex education and AIDS education and all those other things they'll mandate, but to mandate teaching intensive phonics? Let them try it and see what kind of a problem they have with the Texas Education Agency and the International Reading Association and the National Education Association and the National Council of the Teachers of English, who are all involved in this conspiracy to destroy literacy. So, my books are available, I believe, at Carl Reed's table and also the American Opinion table. If you'd like to discuss this further, I don't know if I don't think we have any time for questions. What time is it now? Well, there is a slight... Does anyone have any questions first that they want to... Yes?
When do you recommend teaching a foreign language?
Really at any time that you feel the child is interested and would like to learn. Because there are bilingual children, you know, who learn... who are in families where there's more than one language is taught and they do learn. So it's a matter of the child's temperament and willingness to learn. Well, yes, but first you're teaching the words, you're teaching reading the language, but if you're going to teach it just by sound, I would just use speech when you're dealing with little children. Just let them know that there's a French or Spanish way of saying hello, bonjour or buenos dias or something like that, you see. And you can just expose them to hearing different languages before you actually get down to the basics of teaching grammar and that sort of thing. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
How does teaching my daughter to find an instrument in public kindergarten after a year of kindergarten? She won't.
Sure, that's what they do. You can teach your child phonics at home, and then in the public school, they'll destroy that child's ability to read. It's just been done. I've had this story told to me before. Thank God. Look, bad habits are very difficult to break. The guessing habit, you know, it takes, I would say it takes 3 years to change a sight reader into a phonetic reader. 3 years of tough, grueling tutoring. It's not easy. That's why it's so important to start correctly at the beginning and do not let the child get these bad habits. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Well, it depends. If the child already has the ability to, first of all, remember that another language, some of the letters have different sounds. Generally, the consonants are pretty standard in a language that uses Latin characters. But some of the vowel sounds are different. For example, take the word water in French, which is O, E-A-U. You have to teach the child that E-A-U stands for O in French, you see. That sort of thing. Otherwise, how could the child read E-A-U if he uses, say, English letter sounds? You know, it would be pretty difficult. So the first thing is to teach the word simply by ear, and then later on you have to teach. I would start from the beginning, but I'd wait until the child is proficient in English and in his alphabetic understanding of the English language before then teaching him the alphabet of another language or the sounds of another language, you see. All right, I want to thank you. Oh, well, there's another question, okay. Yes. Well, that's an interesting question because I've often been asked it, and it's when I was at the Portland conference, a mother came up to me with her 3.5-year-old child, little daughter of 3.5 years old, whom she was teaching with Alpha Phonics, and she was very proudly telling me that her daughter was learning to read. And so I said, gee, I'd love to have a little, can I have a little demonstration? And so little Patty sat down and she turned to her latest lesson, which was a page, you know, of sentences, something like this, and she read each sentence very carefully, pronounced it beautifully. I was just amazed, 3.5 years old. Recently, my publisher got a call from the little girl's mother telling him that now the little girl is 4 years old, she's completed the book, and she's reading everything now. So there's a case where a 3.5-year-old could be taught. It depends on the child's interest, willingness to want to learn to read. And, you know, I suppose their temperament, too. I'd say don't force the child until they really want to learn. Of course, if they're 8 years old, you'd better then start forcing, you know. But as I'm saying, there's no set date. You can, as the child has developed a good speaking vocabulary, that's most important. They first must have a decent speaking vocabulary so that they understand sounds, the sound symbol system is understood. And then you simply transfer the spoken sound symbol system to the written sound symbol system. You say those sounds can be written down, you see. That's what I would do if I were you. Well, if there are no further questions, I'll be glad to answer any questions when I'm around here. If you encounter me, feel free to come up to me and ask questions. I'd be very glad to speak to you. Thank you very much. Thank you.